That would be must-see TV, in my opinion, is you and Dave playing like some of the top women's teams.
I think right now we're talking like a 4-1 type of situation of us losing.
Don't care. I want to see it.
Yeah, you want to see it. Yeah, you want to see it. So I mean, if I got in shape and played, we still lose. But I think the score.
If you could play left and really kind of. Do stuff and not get tired.
Yeah, we're gonna lose the match. Okay, we're just gonna lose the match. But I think right now it's a blowout. And if I got going, then it could at least be reasonable.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right. It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Are you? You're not in your basement, are you?
No, I am in my basement. I've been rearranged. I think this is just kind of how it works now in life. Is I leave for an extended road trip and I come back and like the entire downstairs has been switched by Corinne, her mother, and her sister, and they have a master plan down here. And so next time I leave, the basement will be. Completely renovated.
You're just along for the ride. Look, you're just there. Things are going to shift and move and shake, and you just got to hold on.
Yeah, I have family pictures for 1 hour at a farm today at 6:30 p.m. this is what I come home to. My basement is rearranged. I have an hour photo shoot with navy shirts and khaki shorts for, I mean, we haven't done family photos, so I can't say too much, but this is my day. Yesterday was my travel day and I get in at 2:30 a.m. and this is my Tuesday.
Adam, if a random stranger came up to you on the street 5 years ago and said, Adam, in 5 years, you're going to be doing a photo shoot, a choreographed photo shoot for an hour in North Carolina, dressed up with your family. What would you have said?
Well, I mean, I don't even know. And this too, add in the podcast also. I mean, why not put that on the list? Not as extreme, not as extreme as the frolicking through the prairie with, you know, with
on a farm,
summer flowers and on a farm. Yeah. So,
but the interesting part about this timing, Adam, of this photo shoot is that you're right. It's summer flowers because look, we're in early September, but also we know what happens in North Carolina when we get into like late October is you get some nice colors, the trees start changing, the leaves start, the foliage comes. And you know what, if you don't think you're going to have another photo shoot in a month and a half to 2 months, you're absolutely wrong. You're going to have another one.
My mind goes straight to pushing it back till then.
Like,
that's autumn in North Carolina.
Yeah, perfect,
it's a beautiful time. Let's just push back.
But you're going to get, you're doing both, buddy. You're doing both. You're going to get the summer, the late summer, and also you're going to get the early fall.
Wouldn't want to miss out on anything, Robert. Really wouldn't want to get all the seasons. Yes. Let's get all the seasons.
Don't forget Santa in the winter and it's kind of, man, you're on a roll.
Oh, and I've also been informed I was awake for 90 seconds and that we're going heavy on pumpkins this year for Halloween.
Yeah, of course you are.
Of course I am. So, hey, this is the life I live now. Just makes it easier. I mean, if he wasn't just insanely cute, I would be really worried about my lifestyle right now.
But yeah, he is something else. Yeah, you know, you're a good producer of children.
Yeah, well, where are you, Robert?
Okay, I was just telling Josh. Yesterday, I got home to Florida, Ponte Vedra Beach, for the first time since July 22nd.
Okay, yeah, that's a while.
So a lot of travel, a lot of hotel rooms, a lot of airplanes, a lot of, yeah, a lot of stuff. But here
dude,
I am.
Dude, what's the deal? I mean, I know we've talked about this before and no one cares, but
yeah,
what's up with the airlines, man? It is devastating out there. It doesn't matter which one, whatever. United, no, Delta, they're all,
it's all a mess.
It was a rough day. I know it's Labor Day, so I mean that's a slightly built-in excuse, but just I mean you can't schedule the tight layovers.
You can't schedule tight connections.
No, it's
you
got
to give yourself. It's got to be like 2.5 hour connection, and you still might miss it.
I mean, over half my flights are being delayed in some capacity, so it's wild times out there. But you know,
figure
that's,
they'd have this dialed in by now, you know.
Yeah, you would, Adam, you,
I read, I saw a very interesting article about a lady. I don't remember where she's based, but what she does as her full time gig basically is she is able to identify which flights are like at capacity, and she buys like the last ticket on a lot of these flights, very busy routes, and she buys like call it 5 or 6 tickets in a day out of the same airport. And might be different airlines, doesn't matter. But then she'll go to the with no intention of flying on any of these flights. Then she goes to the airport and just sits at the airport all day and waits for them to put on, you know, this flight's overbooked, you know, redeem your coupon. And she's making something absurd, like a couple grand a day just by finding these flights that are overbooked. And all she does is go to the airport in the morning, waits, collects her vouchers, goes home in the evening, and does it again the next day. I mean, pretty brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on a couple where they just keep upping the ante, where it's like,
like 1,200, like, yeah, like it's, silly. It's, yeah,
starts with like $500 and whatever many miles, and it just keeps going up. So, yeah. God bless her. You know, I mean,
it's an interesting strategy.
You got to find a way to hustle. So she just spends time in the terminal, and that's her work day. I respect it.
Yep. Yep.
You gotta, anytime somebody is taking advantage of like a large company, I feel good about that. I don't even really know why. It doesn't have to benefit me or anything, but I'd see a loophole. I see someone taking advantage, sticking it to the company a little bit.
It's like GameStop, Wall Street Bets, GameStop, like that whole, you know, the people over the machine. I'm all about it too.
Roaring Kitty. Look at me.
Roaring Kitty.
How about that?
Hey, yeah. Boom. Hey. Boom.
I watched that. I watched the documentary. It's pretty good stuff, actually. So,
oh, it's really good.
Yeah. He seems like an interesting fellow, but it was fun to follow. I don't know much about the finance stuff, but I've enjoyed the ones that I've seen about like Lehman Brothers and all that stuff. It's wild that stuff like that can happen. But anyway, Rob, how was your weekend? You played a little pickle.
It was reminiscent of last year's Chicago. I hate Chicago. I think it's a terrible place to play pickleball. I do. I think, you know, the name, the Windy City, is it's apt for what's happening there, which is stupid wind, swirly wind, creates terrible conditions for pickleball. It makes it not pickleball. It should be indoors. Big respect to you know, all the indoor pickleball that the PPA has been putting on. You know I respect that. So yeah, indoor pickleball, it's where it should be. Outdoor pickleball, you know, you get crazy conditions. Yeah, who can handle the conditions better? Sure, whatever. I'd rather just have, you know, who's better straight up versus, you know, who can track a swirling ball better. Shoot me. So yeah, no, it was a fine weekend. Chicago's lovely. Chicago's lovely. No, it was fine. It was fun to play with Jack for the first time. Played with Cass Hoke for the first time, who's here in Jacksonville. I think she's super underrated and a really, really good player. And she's like she plays similar to, she's like a younger, less experienced Susanna Barr. Okay. In terms of the way she plays, Susanna's a little stronger, like on the backhand, like scoop and dig and counters and stuff like that. But I think Cass plays like you know, nice forehand drop, like the same, similar, like roll, unorthodox, no racket sports background, kind of a heavy forehand roll dink, very, very similar to Susanna. Cass has got some good slippery stuff down the line. I think she's going to be very good. Her and Anderson Scarpe have had plenty of good results in mixed. And we lost to Will Howes and Yana Newell in a pretty close one. Could have gone either way. I think at least in the first game, we were up like 9-8 or something like that, 9-7 maybe. And just like, you know, some of the bigger points we couldn't come through on. But fun to play with her, fun to play with Jack. You know, I'm posting up on the left side like you know, not how I want to be. But, you know, nonetheless, I persist. Just hitting a lot of backhand dinks, which I'm not going to miss very many of. But, you know, on the forehand side, I feel like I have so many options to kind of pick apart the person right in front of me, from left hip to right shoulder to just cross body to middle. I just feel like I have a lot of options. On the backhand side, I'm not dinking two hands often. I'm pulling a little bit with two hands. But if I go two hands, they know it's coming somewhere. So, you know, I either need to get more comfortable on the two-hand backhand dink. I need to find more options on one-hander offense. I just don't have as many options being offensive on the backhand side, which, you know, is whatever.
No, I mean, I don't matter anymore at all, but I feel the same way left to right. I got nothing over there. Way more forehand action going on. So, yeah I didn't know that Cass Hogue was a no racket sport. And she was, you know, kind of in that mix of a clump of girls that I didn't know too much about, kind of in the back end of the challenger. And I believe she actually reached out to the Hard Eights, if I'm not mistaken. So, I can't believe you hadn't played with Jack yet. I know we chatted about it a couple times that you're going to play several with him.
English Open last year with him. That was literally it, though. Okay, that really didn't count.
Yeah so, no, I hear you. And what was the temperature in Chicago?
Saturday, Friday, silly hot. The sun was out. Yeah, you know, you have to wear sunscreen.
He said that just disgusted us. The sun was out. How dare it come out?
Yeah. But Friday, it actually rained in the morning, and then we went indoors, but taped, you know, it was an indoor tennis facility. So tape lines,
gotcha.
Good nets, but tape lines, didn't know we were going indoors till literally a text went into my unknown folder for whatever reason. They emailed the first announcement saying, hey, this was like 7:30. There'll be another announcement at 8:30, but there was not an email announcement. The announcement came to text, and I didn't see text. So I find out I'm 25 minutes from the indoor venue. I find out 20 minutes before match time, and I'm 25 minutes away. So I'm like, you know, AJ, I'm hauling ass to get to the indoor facility.
AJ.
And it's just frazzled, you know, just get there, you're frazzled.
AJ, who is it?
Oh my gosh.
AJ wants to press the buttons on the computer so bad.
Press the buttons. You want to touch my silly looking face?
AJ, who is that guy?
What?
We out there?
Yeah. All right, good run, buddy.
Woo-hoo.
That was excellent.
Gosh, he's adorable.
Maximum 15 seconds of child on stream. But we got to get it in when we can.
We get some nice words out?
Yeah, he's got some, you know, like some ball and banana, and I come back. Yeah, Corinne says he says much more than that. I apologize.
He says banana. He doesn't say
it's
nana,
like nana
or something.
It's like nana.
Okay.
Yeah, like nana. And I come back. I mean, it's been 12 days away, and he's like furrowing his brow. So he'll just look.
Yeah,
at
he's
me.
Like,
he'll just
who
look
are
at
you?
Me like this. And it's not even just to me. It's just his new trick, and he's into it.
Yeah.
And he just continues. So it's. Yeah, it's wild.
Oh, that's fun.
How quick it changes. Yeah, I mean, back-to-back tournaments. I mean, that's a while.
Yeah.
So he's
yeah,
a different
that is...
dude. Okay, sorry to cut you off. What were you talking about? Continue.
Friday we did go indoors, but it was like a last minute notification. So, you know, rushing to the venue, get in a little late, just blah, 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 blah. So, you know, that was indoors, which is nice, but it was, it was rushed.
Yeah.
And not expected, and tape lines. So... Saturday, hot, sunny. Have to go through a lot of shirts. The APP's got a new policy where you have to match, and you have to match closely, apparently. Because I went on center for my semifinal with Jack, and you know he's wearing the blue, all the navy blue, and I'm like, I've got a Selkirk, that dark kind of bluish camo shirt. It's like the only dark blue I have.
Yes.
And I only have one, right? And Adam, we're talking hot and humid in Chicago. There's something about this corn sweat going on, like the corn in Iowa sweating and making all of the Midwest humid or something. I have no idea, but it was wildly humid because of the corn. And to expect me to wear this one blue shirt the whole day is absolutely insane. So I have another shirt, which I consider, this is a Selkirk shirt. I might even have it somewhere close, but I consider it a lighter shade of blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably have it too. It's like the green one that has Selkirk all over it, kind of like in different fonts.
Yes.
And then there's also what I would consider a blue one, which I asked a lot of people and they were like, that's gray. And I'm like, it's blue. And it's a fight I was losing. And the head ref, Brett, was over there and he was like, I can't let this happen. Apparently the APP really wants you to match. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not, I don't look like a homeless person. I look like I'm wearing a collared shirt. I'm wearing, I look put together. It's I would consider it light blue, and Jack's wearing a dark blue. Just let us go. It's all good. Mm-mm. And this is right before my semifinal, and my opponent's already warming up, and I'm stressed because I'm like, do I have to go put on my soaking wet dark blue shirt? They're trying to make me wear a dark blue APP shirt, and I'm like, I can't wear an APP shirt. I gotta wear a Selkirk shirt. Like, you think Selkirk's gonna be okay with me being on stream wearing an APP shirt and no Selkirk? No chance. So it's just they eventually just said, okay, we'll let it happen this one time, but never again. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. Sure. Can I go warm up now and then go start warming up? And they're like, 1 minute. I'm like, what? Like, they've pulled me across. So then you just start the match all frazzled again. Weird, a very aggressive clothing policy by the APP in terms of having to match aggressively close. And then I've got this white Selkirk Roan shirt, which I don't like to wear necessarily. I like collared shirts. I feel professional. It's what I like to wear. I'm a collared shirt guy, like Altoff Merchant, the Mumbai Monster. but they made me wear a white shirt to match with Jack, and I didn't like it. And that's why we lost on Sunday.
That's fair. That was a nice rundown. I do not like being rushed. Rushed is the worst.
I need to have my process.
So have the conversation, but let's get 3 minutes, not one. When you just pull the ripcord on me like that after, that's tough. I mean, who knows, if you were indoors the whole time, you might have just only needed that one shirt. So,
Look, Adam, then we have this sunscreen situation, right? Which Malin's all over me for sunscreen because her mom's dealt with some pretty rough skin cancer stuff. So, and I'm not the darkest skin person in the world, right? So I've got, I'm pretty light skin, freckles, and I need to wear sunscreen. But when I do that, Adam, this is what happens. It leaks down into my eyes burn, I can't see. So I'm literally playing this match with blurry vision, which, big props to me for even being able to compete at this level with blurry vision, right? So respect, Rob. And then also you have, let's talk about the hands, right? Like, sunscreen's oily, and that's on your hands and it makes your paddle slippery, which is, look, I'm going against all the odds out here. I'm battling the elements and I'm still performing at a decent level. So
how'd you win a
big
point?
Big props,
Rob,
to me. Exactly. Outside winning a point.
With the stupid sun that came up that day. I mean, good Lord.
Look, we haven't even gone really hard into the wind, which...
The sweating corn in the Midwest. The sweating corn in the Midwest has made it humid, more humid than
humid,
normal.
Swirling humidity because of the sweating corn with the air flows that are just blowing from Iowa up to Chicago. It's a real thing.
Wow, that's my goodness, buddy.
So that was my weekend. And I came straight into Chicago from India. So I was going to bed at 6 o'clock every night, waking up at 1 a.m. And And then by noon, I'm ready to like go to bed again. So
it's the worst. I hate it was, going to bed too early. It's brutal. Sometimes
you gotta try to stay awake till like 8 or 9, and then you can normally get a decent like wake up at 5 or something. But like going to bed at 6, you're done. You're screwed.
Yeah. No. Absolutely done for. Well, speaking of indoor pickle, we had a little bit of that for my weekend at the beautiful Fountain Blue Hotel. It was just lovely.
The aesthetics were on point.
I heard
the playability was a little questionable on the court side, but it looked dope. Awesome.
I thought it looked the best it's ever looked on the stream. And you know, like people are just in a good mood when they're in Vegas, whether that's alcohol related or not. There's just a vibe, dressed up a little bit better, a little more, you know, just free is what you would say, and looking for a good time. So it was a fun atmosphere. Yes, there was some issues of playability. I'm not just saying this because I work there, but I think it was a little bit not as bad as some people made it seem. There was.
I would have assumed, like, APP's done quite a lot on rollout, and yeah, you're going to have some odd bounces here and there. Some courses are going to be some spots are going to be a little rougher than others, but I think mostly I saw pretty clean points for the most part.
Yeah, and there was like a couple courts that were better than others, and like you said, it wasn't as consistent. So there was one or two spots that were possibly an issue, but when it hit true for most of the court, almost if not all of the court, it was a fine bounce, and it was just slightly less bouncy overall and in general, and really in general things, or just the fact that there's some consistency to it, even if it's different, it is okay, not as bad as just clean as heck on this bounce and then terrible on this bounce,
or a random gust of wind that came from nowhere from the corn sweat.
Yeah,
100%.
Correct. The swirling humidity. I've never heard it described that way. The swirling humidity. So I would say just as much the playability of the court is that they were fairly tight in a couple spots. So there was like these wooden planks put underneath, and they were only of a certain size. So you could so the championship and the grandstand, I don't think it was an option to extend a couple extra feet. It just kind of was what it was. So I think that just where it was and being in that huge ballroom with lots of space and, you know, almost everyone staying at the hotel and being there, it created a cool atmosphere and a cool vibe. And I hope they do it again and maybe work out some of those small kinks that were there. But it's a vibe in Vegas, and I want it I want it to continue.
Yeah, and I think to me, what I love about Pickle One is that it's so accessible that you can lay a cork down, right, and do that pretty much anywhere where you have a level surface. So I like that you can go to these really cool places and put down a court. Like we've done it at the Stock Exchange.
Right.
You know, I've seen it on like Beale Street in Memphis. I've seen it it's gone, you know, Dubai, like with the Burj Khalifa in the background. Like there's all these cool places you can put pickleball courts. And I think that's like what a big draw is. And I think like laying it out in like big convention centers, like we did one in Chicago for the APP last year during the furry convention. And it's just, I love convention centers. I think they're nice. They're got high ceilings. You got carpet, you got the court spread out. It just looks really nice. It's fun to play in that environment. It's AC. There's no wind. There's no sun. There's no sunscreen getting in my eyes. I perform at a peak level. It's the future.
Yeah, no, I love it too. And just having it, I mean, the Fountain Blue, it might be the nicest one on the strip. It's like relatively
brand
new,
right?
New.
Like we talked about this.
It's like a couple months. I got the scoop from the Uber driver. You know, it took like 20 years to build because of the financial crisis and all that crap that we talked about. But it was extremely nice. They had these trusses with the lights. They did a little smoke show with introductions. And as you said, like the aesthetic on stream was might be the best I've ever seen. So it was, it was awesome. We had Andre, Agassi, and Steffi Graf that just rolled up with Justin Gimelstob to watch for a couple hours while we were on the tennis channel, which just gives it extra legitimacy, you know, when those heavy hitters are checking it out. And it was awesome. Like Andre was like, you know, I was looking over at the beginning of the men's doubles match on Sunday and like Zane did a mini scorpion and just like swatted a counter. And Andre was like, oh, you know, like he's a pickle guy, dude. He's a pickle guy.
No, he is.
Andre Agassi over there, like getting fired up about a counter from Zane Navratil. I mean, that's pretty cool. If you ask me. So,
big props to Zane on a big weekend too.
Yeah, no, it was a great run. I mean, he got hit about 17 times in the last match, but I mean, he made it to the finals. Kudos to Zane. And he played great. It was cool to see. There were some old school fellas that had some nice runs at the PPA Vegas. So, you know, anytime an old guard slips through there, I'm pretty happy with it to have them run deep in the tournament.
I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item and a carry-on on most carriers. And both items are big backpacks. I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry-on, so I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days, so I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big. You need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. But yeah, you're right, because I can put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
And speaking of Zane, he's been making some comments about commentary and what he thinks. I believe I saw it on Twitter, like a soccer reference. So he thinks that pickleball commentary should be more like soccer and less like tennis, to where you are actually talking during the points, especially if you're 100%. Watching like a J-Dub Dillon match or something where that you have these.
Of course, where they're just dinking 38 times. Yeah,
40 second.
Guys, hitting backhand dinks cross court. Be quiet. Like, no, who cares? Talk.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, so I talked over some points early in the games, and I kind of laid out at the end. I did that several times throughout the weekend. But
Adam, we talked about this. It was like I mentioned this is like we should talk during points, because I think when people got annoyed in the past and they're like, no talking during points, it was because Dave Weinbach was commentating, right? We talked about this.
Yeah,
they don't want to hear that.
Talking about his clinic and how to sign up for it. He's not even talking about anything related to the match. So, I mean, pickleball strategy is not solving. I don't think commentary is even anywhere close to solve. So it's a different situation. I mean, Catherine and Anna Lee are taking like 5.5 seconds average in between points. Something insane. So there's so many times that I kind of get shut down from saying something, whether it's not even a knock, whoever my play-by-play is, talking a little too long, and then Catherine's ready to serve again, and I just have to not say something strategic or shut it down, or I'm, that ball, after the point was over, that ball bounced right to her, so she's going to serve quickly, so I can't say anything right here. So I think that's a little silly. 9-9 in the third, sure, shut up, don't say anything, but for a good chunk of the broadcast, I think that there's plenty of times to say something meaningful and relate it to the patterns and what is happening on court without being like sloppy and, just running on about nothing, which is what I think most people have issue with, is when it's a story that's irrelevant to what's happening on court.
Yeah. And I think just like any other sport, like football, yada, yada, where you might have like, you know, in football, I get annoyed when I'm watching some, when I'm watching a game and it's like very biased commentary, like when they're obviously like leaning towards one team over the other based on the little things they're, you know, nitpicking. And in that case, I'll just mute it. Right. And I don't care. So I think that's always the solution, right? If they don't like what's being said, then they can mute it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And
that's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is tough. Like I try to stay as even as possible. Of course, I'm going to talk about Anna Lee more. I mean, you literally have to because of what she's doing is ridiculous. And that was a pretty lopsided championship Sunday. The men's final was pretty solid, four games. But the others were pretty blowout style. And that's just how it goes sometimes. But man, it is. I actually like it. I use the reference about Tiger, like in the late 90s and early 2000s, where it's like you want to watch to see him win by 17 strokes against the best players in the world. Like it was
because he's doing absurd stuff.
Yeah, he's doing absurd stuff, just like Anna Lee is. But I'll admit it's tough in my seat as analyst when I'm commentating her matches. I don't really know. It's just
like, you have to right? Like why?
Yeah.
Like you. It is the story, right? It's the story of how good she is and how big of a gap there is between her and everybody else. That is the story. And how can you not talk about it?
Right. So, I mean, she hits more good shots. I'm there to describe the action. She hits more good shots than anybody else. So I'm going to talk about it. But even...
And like it's...
I was
going to say this.
Go ahead,
Adam.
No.
You go ahead.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just like... What am I supposed to say? What strategy am I supposed to – I mean, God love them. They're an amazing team, and I love calling their matches, and they beat good people all the time. But what am I supposed to say in the Brasha match? Like, it was just – I mean, it was just steamroll central. Just winners everywhere. Annalise just rolling balls. She's firing balls off the bounce, clean winners left and right. It's like, hey, try this. And, not going to work. Oh, ramp up the pace. Not going to work. Hey, look for drive and crash. Not going to work. So it's it's impressive what she does. And I think a lot of people do feel that way. Like she is so good and there's such a gap that that's why they tune into her matches, because they already know the result.
100% agree. I think to me it is like what, like also outside of just the dominance and how badly she's beating people, I think the unsolved part is like who is going to come along that is going to be able to challenge what she's doing. And it's interesting because like you think back to the Tiger reference and you think to like how badly he's beating people, and that's not really the story. The story isn't like, okay, well, who's going to come along that can challenge him? Because like when he was beating people by like 17, like whatever it was, like, you know, running away with tournaments and winning multiple tournaments in a row, even Scottie Scheffler this year, it's like so dominant. The question isn't like who's going to come along to challenge, right? Because like when those stories are coming up, it's more of a recent new development that they're just like all of a sudden like dominating. Anna Lee's been dominating for a very long time. So I think the more like relevant story along that is, how are people going to come up and challenge her? What's the style of play got to be? Is it mimicking what she's doing and just doing it to the same level or better? Is it a different style? Is it a different, you know, is it a different type of person, like a Viv Glossman who's got more of a physical presence than Anna Lee does and has just as much power? Is it somebody like that or a team like that where you have two Vivian Glossmans that can just overpower as well? Like that's the more interesting conversation, I think, when it comes to like Anna Lee and her dominance, because you can only talk about her dominance so long. But now I think the interesting story is like, what does that challenger look like? Yeah. Singles and doubles.
It's got to be just a 6 foot tall, heavy handed team.
I would think so. Right.
I just don't see how anyone Anna Lee's around 5'6". Like her. Just her athleticism and her foot speed and just the way she moves and the way she hits shots and awkward body positions and on the run. I don't think it's going to be someone like that matches her. It's going to be, it's going to be something that she doesn't have. And what does she not have? The only thing is length and two Vivian Glossmans that are,
play. She makes up with that with speed and athleticism.
I know. So, and it's not like, you know, Simone had a phenomenal run as well, but Simone was on her way out. Simone was like 38 to 40 when this was happening. When this was happening, I mean, she's dang 17. And so, I mean, there's still like massive amount of untapped potential in someone who is already this dominant. So I worry for the field aggressively. And the only thing that I mean, this is picking nits, but the only thing she doesn't have is length. So
yeah,
that's what's different. So two Vivian Glossmans that play a clean soft game and you know, have slightly more raw power than Anna Lee. I don't know, from the shoulders. She's ridiculous. She's ridiculous from the shoulders. So I don't know, but it's just wild stuff. And
yeah, I think I feel like the athleticism's the underrated part about Anna Lee. And not to bring this back to Caitlin Clark, but I'm going to. I saw an interesting quote by her dad, Brent Clark, and it was clips of her. So in six games as a high school freshman, Adam, in soccer, not basketball, in six games she scored 26 goals. Caitlin Clark. She was the only freshman to get chosen to the first team all state. So she was like a powerhouse soccer player. And quote by her dad was that, I don't say this, you know, just because I'm her dad or just because, you know, I think she's the best, but I think her talent in soccer and what she's able to do in soccer would be just as great as what she's doing in basketball right now. So I think you just have athletes that come along sometimes that are just so athletic and so talented. You know, soccer to pickleball is a weird one, right? Because it's apples to oranges, and that athleticism doesn't usually translate super well. But Anna Lee does play kind of an unorthodox style, right? She, in movement wise, she's kind of chaotic and all over the place. It's not super structured, which is, I think, one of her strengths, is that she sees the court a little differently than like a tennis player sees it. Like, she sees openings and like places to go where in tennis, it's not really something you would do or see. So I think, I just think it's a fascinating thought. Just comparing like her style versus traditional tennis. And I know she played a little tennis, but it's certainly not the traditional style.
Yeah, no, I agree. Very impressive. Don't see how it's going to end anytime soon. Somebody come on over, challenge, bring that special skill set, because it's going to take a special skill set to even be in the conversation with her. And I mean, she even said that in the interview with Kate Fahey. Kate Fahey's been having a phenomenal month.
Yeah.
You know, just absolute stud, rocking the
crushing second, good players,
second, third, and fourth seeds consistently the last, you know, three tournaments or whatever. And Anna Lee, like, it's wild some of the motivation that she can find. You know, she's been dominant for so long, and that's all it took. Oh, this Kate Fahey, new on the block. She's been smoking people. I've taken a tournament off. I have not played singles for this specific event. And she went out there and just crushed her. 11-0, and then really it was a little slide and an ankle tweak that allowed Kate to come back for a few points. But I mean, 0-5 or 0-6, whatever it was, against a player that has been hot as anyone has been bursting on the scene from a singles perspective in the last couple of years. Too good.
And that's the absolute point I was going to make, Adam, is that Annalie's been in the situation, right, where she's seen a different player really making some moves in singles, like she saw with Paris Todd, you know, back in Newport, right, where Paris really came on the scene and got that W over Anna Lee. And Anna Lee's, you know, you got to imagine this time around, she's obviously learned from that. And, you know, she probably took this much more seriously and wanted to make a statement more than anything else based on that experience she had with Paris when Paris came along and got the W on her. So, you know, just the fact that she's able to lock in, like you said, being so dominant, but also being still so hungry is that's the true special mark of like a great special competitor.
Yeah.
It's the true mark of a great competitor.
Yeah. I mean, if I ever won five tournaments in a row, I mean, I would be just off into the sunset. Like, the motivation, the hunger and the performance is a special combination from her.
Yeah.
This men's match was wild for a couple reasons. So there had to be 20 or so body bags, and like, just not glancing blows, just really aggressive tags. Andre got hit multiple times. Zayn was the most, which is wild. Because, I mean, Zayn's just turned sideways. How do you hit the guy?
And he's so, he like turns into like a piece of cardboard. He's so
a
thin.
He's a piece of paper when he turns sideways. Yeah. And so there was some, it was, it was just like soft dinking and then body bags. Like that was a lot of the pattern that was going on in this match.
But the funny bit was that Andre on his backhand flick was tagging Zayn, and Andre doesn't get a lot of juice on his backhand flick.
Like, I'll just say it. I love Andre's skill set, and I always say big man soft hands, but his overall power is not what it should be. I mean, it should be
better.
No,
it's average.
It should be better. He has middling raw power, which is crazy for a 6'4 Romanian guy, but whatever. And also, Dekel's serve was a big point of contention. I actually think that most, if not all, of Dekel's serves are technically legal.
Yeah.
But the aesthetic of what he's doing with the toss and the up on the tiptoe, and like I can't blame people for watching it and thinking he's swinging from the nipples.
The letter of the law, letter of the law, he's at waist.
Right. Correct. So. So I think, I mean, if you just look at James' serve, who we'll say is similar level to Dekel's, it doesn't look illegal at all because he just kind of puts the paddle there, just drops the ball,
short
swings
swing
through.
Too.
Exactly. So, but there was a lot of just reserving. So you have questionable, you get to reserve. And if you have an actual fault, then that's challengeable and you lose the point. So there was maybe 12 to 15 questionable calls where Dekel just gets to reserve, and I don't know exactly how
that
like looks.
That.
I don't know exactly how that looks to a casual fan. He's like, why? Well, he got called for his serve, and now he's reserving over and over again.
It should be a fault regardless. The same thing happened with Will Howells. He got called quite a few times.
Yeah, he's signed.
In our mixed match,
he comes from the side pretty aggressively. Yeah,
he does, and it's. But again, like we're still so subjective, right? At this waist level deal, I agree with Zayn in respect to, like the drop serve is just like the most objective way to serve. You know, if we're talking about legal versus illegal, and I think that's how we should go about it. Hopefully we do. I think. Otherwise, I don't care if the serve's a weapon. You know, if you're hitting it under the circumstances of it being legal, it's fine. It does give an advantage to the taller guys, right? Like the Dekels, who can especially get on his tippy toes. Like his serve trajectory, the ball trajectory, is never going up. And I think that's also why it looks illegal to a lot of people, is it's a laser trajectory kind of down the whole way.
It is.
So there's no arc on it. So it's an advantage to the taller players, which, look, in tennis, you know, you have the Isners, you have the Queries. It's an advantage. It serves an advantage to the taller guys there too. So I'm not saying that's why, like, we should try to level it, but you know, the game was built on the receiving team having the advantage.
Right.
So if we want to keep it that, then we have to do something. If we want to change the game completely and make the serving team have more of an advantage, we can do that too. But I think along these lines, Adam, and not to go on too long of a diatribe here, but like, what are your thoughts? And I'll throw this to you, because I've been kind of chill on it for a long time, but now it's truly affecting some earnings and income potential. Paddle, the where we're at with the paddles is not okay, and it's not just one company now; it's multiple companies. And it's a serious advantage versus, you know, I'm playing with the Lux 20 millimeters, right? Like I'm okay with playing with a softer paddle, but when I have faster hands than most of these people and I should be winning these hands battles, they connect once with a good thump and the paddle's 25-30%, you know, more powerful than what I have. It's not a level playing field. And to be able to hit a serve in a forehand and to not get a paddle on a forehand, it's just not a level playing field. I don't care what we do. We have to figure out a way to keep a level playing field. That's all I care about. Because right now it is not level, and it's affecting the quality of the game. And yeah. people that aren't as skilled or talented in this game are getting wins they shouldn't get because they're playing with something that's significantly better.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have an answer for right or wrong.
What's the vibe though? What's the vibe at the PPA? Cause I'm obviously not around, but are people upset or are they just dealing with it now? And
no, sure. No, there's definitely, and that's level. I mean, that's the word you want to, it doesn't matter one way or the other or threshold wise in terms of that, but it needs to be level. So, I mean, I think I don't think we're talking about 2% or 5%. I think there's some situations where it really is 15 to 20% more powerful. We're talking, you can only hit a pickleball, whatever, 60, 70 miles per hour, something like that at the absolute hardest. So if someone's hitting it 55 and someone's hitting it 65, I mean, that's a massive deal.
Huge.
And I think you're right. So some of the, you know, firefights, the quick adjustments that those hand speed advantage players have. And now it's just what one connect during that exchange, however elongated the exchange might be, one solid connect with a special, with a special product in your hand, that's a massive game changer. So that takes away a huge chunk of the skill of a lot of the players who can make those quick adjustments on the fly or adjust the paddle position or get to where they need to hit it flush. And that is neutralized by technology. It is a bit of a sad story when it comes to that. Now, exactly where the game's going, I don't know what's right. It's clear we want the receiver to have advantage, as that was baked into creating the game and the rules and how it was supposed to be played in the eyes of the forefathers. But I'm, oh my, looky there. That's sweet.
Oh, this is Finn.
Finn, how you doing? So I'm not against like changing the way it's played to some regard. I just don't know what the exact balance is, but playing field has to be even. That agreed. Has to be even. Let your skill set and your training and everything else be the factor that allows you to rise a little bit above someone else. Don't make it an equipment situation. And I know there's a lot of moving parts. It's very difficult, and it's moving in the right direction. And everything this early in pickleball, I think people get a little too worked up about all of it in general, because it is moving. It's just moving slower than they want to, but I don't think it's necessarily moving slow in general. It's just part of the deal with the young sport. And that's my rant on it as someone who does not compete anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just Adam, you know, as a player, like just tracking the ball, right? Like we get so many reps that we know how a ball is supposed to track, even off a hotter paddle. Yeah. We know it. Yeah. You know, you're still tracking it though. What is crazy to me is like when some of these paddles, the ball is coming off, like my eyes aren't tracking it because it is like a percentage higher to where like it's so different that like I'm not even able to like really register it. So that's where it gets like really like kind of funky and crazy, is when you know you're not tracking it well because it's so hot.
Yeah, and I might be late on the swing, but I'm seeing the ball the whole way. And yeah, I think that there's situations now where that doesn't happen. And I mean, this was, you know, a lot of this technology stuff has happened post me playing, but I remember playing rec the first year that I had stopped playing. And my skills are now, but they were still decent then. And I remember playing some rec games, and I'm pretty solid in the midcourt. And I was getting in my athletic stance, I was getting my paddle position where I wanted to, and the ball was just going over my paddle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was like there, ready. The person's not hitting a full-on overhead. They're just kind of swinging from the shoulder. And I literally whiffed 3 to 5 shots with the ball just going over my paddle because the tracking and the pace off the paddle was so different than what it was previously and in my last, you know, playing year or whatever. So yeah. A slight miss hit, you know, a little off. Someone's got more more spin, you know, whatever. That's what it is. That guy's good. But this was something completely different, and it was a mix of the talent, and a good chunk of it was equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we got to figure out a level. We got to figure out how to get it level, and that's above my pay grade. But
2025, baby, let's go. That's the year. We're about,
it's affecting a lot of people.
Yeah, we're about to get the line call situated pretty soon here at the next event. So, you know, 2025, that's the year of even paddle play.
I like it.
That's it. That's what I got.
I like it. I'm looking forward to the future, Adam.
Uh huh. I mean, look, upward and onward, right? Upward and onward.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Let's see here.
So we don't, I mean, we're 48 minutes in. Okay. I think what I'd like to do with like tips now is not just come up with a random tip, but come up with something that like either you saw over the weekend in Vegas that happened that we can talk about, or something that I saw playing that we can talk about.
Okay.
Anything come to mind off the top of your head that you saw that was like?
I'm gonna have to note that to come up with one during my 25 hours of commentary. I'm sure I can. I'm sure I could find something that's happening.
You saw a little bit of pickleball.
Yeah, a little bit of pickleball. I mean, I tell you what, it was my C-minus game on Sunday. Lopsided game.
It's hard.
Was like at the end of a 12 day bender. It felt like pickleball, and I was just. I felt like everything I was saying was just so middling and so just not in depth and nothing really good. But you know what can you do,
Adam? One thing I thought about is like, are you? And I'm imagining this would just help with commentary. Are you still trying to get? I know MLP, you try to get on court a little bit, but
yes.
Are you playing with? Are you trying to mix in with a lot of the players, just trying to get some games in? Because I think that helps commentary, right? Is like seeing the ball yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Not as much as I should. So, yeah. It's to the point, and you know, for a while it was fine. I could mix in with anyone. It's to the point where if it's like I go see whatever Pablo Fed and Thomas Wilson, and they need a fourth, I'm a little worried about jumping in that game at this point. Basically, you know, I don't like to be the worst guy on the court, and that would clearly be the situation there. But I agree completely. I think seeing certain players on court, I think it's 10x from watching. So
yeah, agreed.
Even from a coaching standpoint. So throw commentating in there as well, whatever. But just being on court, seeing the shot that's coming, it allows you that special insight to talk about maybe another player that's going to be in your shoes on stream. Going heads up from that player. After I've seen it, then I can comment deeper and better about it. So it's something that I should be doing on the road. I don't play at home much at all, like almost zero. So when I get on the road, I should get on court more. And I do think that helps a ton, coaching and commentating.
I saw a post. I don't know if it was Dave or you or maybe the PPA. I'm not sure, but it was
Dave.
You and Dave were hitting. And I think was it Catherine Anna Lee also warming up?
Yes.
So that would be must see TV in my opinion, is you and Dave playing like some of the top women's teams. Like I would love to watch that.
Yeah. I think right now we're talking like a 4-1 type of situation of us losing.
I don't care. I want to see it.
You want to see it. So, I mean, if I got in shape and played, we still lose. But I think the score.
If you could play left and really kind of do stuff, not get tired.
Yeah, well, I mean we're still gonna lose the match. Okay, we're just gonna lose the match. But I think right now it's a blowout, and if I got going, then it could at least be reasonable. But they're ridiculous, and they're just and just especially. I mean, you think of the offense when you think of that team, but it's really the ball making and the resets when they happen to get on their heels that they get out of. So I think it would be bad.
I always think about this with like Annalie and Catherine. It's like even when they're in defensive positions, right? It's like. It's a little annoying because you see like the teams at the kitchen, the other team, like Anna Lee and Catherine or whoever are back, and the team at the kitchen's like hitting big forehands deep, and Annalise hitting two-handed backhand rolls into the kitchen. Like, and it's like, she's 3 feet off the baseline behind it. And still like, she's never going to hit, like she's, it's going to be a perfect ball.
Yeah.
And it's like, how, like miss something, you know, she's going to make it. Like she, you don't get these random errors, like even from like really defensive positions where she just misses a ball in the net. It just doesn't happen.
No,
it doesn't happen. It's not and it's real. So it's so stupid. Yeah, pisses me off a little bit. It's like you have to miss some of those. You can't make every one of the midcourt. You can't make every one 4 feet from behind the baseline and not just make it, but put it in the kitchen. Like it's stupid.
Yeah.
Stop.
So, miss. All right, so here's yeah, and this, I mean, this is not gonna work against that team, but that is something that I have seen where could be a tip from some of the last two tournaments is when you are playing an aggressive team is to beat them to the punch. It's just not going to work with Catherine and Annalie, but we have seen it work against the Johns brothers. So there is just so many teams that are so comfortable when dictating play. And just when you throw them regular patterns, regular stuff, they're just in their comfort zone and they just, they're feeling good and there's almost nothing you can do. So to do something a little unorthodox or to snatch that offense away from them and take it away from them, and you can do that in a variety of ways. I think against certain teams like that, that you come up to at the pro level, at the amateur level, the offensive minded teams, that is the best strategy than to pull back and, oh, we're going to out ball make the offensive team with defense and consistent soft stuff. So that I don't think that's really an option anymore. It used to be, it used to be, but now with the equipment and with, you know, the overall level of talent of a player, whether it pro or a little bit below pro, you have to have something else and you have to take that offensive prowess away from them with your shot selection, even if it means more errors creeping into your game.
Yeah, I agree. You can't get bullied. And you mentioned like the Johns, you know, they want to play their slow, methodical, grindy, you know, wait for the good percentage ball to speed up. You're seeing Colin speed up a little bit more now, right? Like you're seeing him hit a little bit of a bigger cert. Like they're trying to adjust and trying to change. Do you think this is one of the more surprising stories on the year is their lack of finals?
Yeah, no, I think so. And it was weird because granted it was early round play and that makes it easier to do something new. But Colin was cracking the serve. He was driving at a high clip and he was poaching. When he was not getting the third in the first two rounds that I called, and then they get up against Newman and Alshon, and it was full pullback mode. Now, I granted maybe just because it was Riley and they've had great recent success against Riley, they went back to old algorithm, but it never changed. Like there was no real speed ups. Colin sped up less than five times on the match, and they just went back to old school. So maybe that plays into my point exactly. Newman and Alshon were looking to be aggressive, and the Johns just did full pullback mode. And with the level of athlete and the equipment, you just can't do that anymore. It's just not even an option, at least for the Johns brothers in the later rounds of the tournament, we'll say quarters and on, to do that anymore. So I think it is a little shift in the balance of power, and I think the old algorithm is dead.
It
doesn't have to be full on sloppy offense, but it must be some form of hybrid now between the old style and the new style. The complete total old style of the way they play might just literally be dead and dead and gone.
Well, does that go also the same for J-Dub and Dylan then?
I think so.
Are J-Dub and Dylan's hands on the counter better if they
They are. I don't think just flat out you attack the same ball 100 times to the Johns brothers and Dylan and J-Dub. Dylan and J-Dub hands have the advantage.
Agree. I agree. Yeah.
So,
but at the same time, I still feel like that even like it's a similar algorithm, right? They play similar. Uh-huh. Dylan will obviously speed up more off the bounce on the right than Colin will, I think, and rely on their hands a little bit more. So maybe a bit more offensive, but I would say, you know, comparing J-Dub and Ben's probably going to pull a little bit more and have a little bit more of a success rate than J-Dub will.
Definitely.
But at the same time, J-Dub and Dylan are going to have to also go more hybrid mode and be a bit more aggressive, you know, balls off the bounce, a little bit more shake and bake, not just drop and get into the grindy points, because, you know, you have guys like Alshon and Alshon's ball off the bounce has gotten so good this year. And that's
better.
You know, that's something we've talked about with J-Dub for so long, is like he has to do a better job developing that ball, because it's, you know, you don't want to have, I think the future is you don't want to have any safe spots on the court. You want every spot in the kitchen to be a dangerous spot, some more dangerous than others, but you cannot allow any safe spots in the kitchen, whether it's your backhand. And, you know, talking about my playing on the left, Adam, I feel like, you know, if you get the ball to bounce on my backhand side, you're relatively safe, right?
Yeah.
I might pull a stupid hook, you know, try to hook the ball, you know, down the middle or lot, but it's not a great speed up, and it's not going to be a tough ball to counter. So the future is finding, you know, being able to have every spot in the kitchen between both partners be danger spots. And like, I think with, you know, there's some gaps there with the Johns as well as J-Dub and Dylan.
Yeah, I agree, and we're still talking about a small sample.
Four or five
rough tournaments for J-Dub and Dylan, and maybe seven or eight rough tournaments for the Johns brothers, at least up to their standard. So is this small sample size noise, or are these tough results recently just kind of something that's going to start happening as you have to. You know, you have to beat three or four good offensive teams with a completely plain style. Is that a thing anymore? I don't know. So I think the rest of the year will say a lot about that. But I think just full on patience is dead. You have to be a threat, and I agree. You know, you're an 80% favorite in this great situation to speed up, but even the ones that are obvious old style dinks, you got to have a little fear and take some cracks in those spots too, or you're just gonna lose.